Homeless in Minneapolis in podcast 771, the Bob Davis Podcasts. So here's what we're going to do in this podcast. We're going to take a walk and talk through a homeless tent camp that has popped up along a major thoroughfare in Minneapolis recently, and it has been growing in size pretty much every day. As we walk through the camp and talk to its residents, one of the things you can't avoid thinking about is what it's going to be like to live out here when it's below zero, and it is usually below zero in Minneapolis and St. Paul during the winter. Well, first of all, I want to thank Ryan Plumbing for sponsoring this podcast, because it's a special podcast. It was a special thing to do, to spend a day and spend some time here with these guys at the Minneapolis homeless tent camp right here along Highway 55. And I want to thank Ryan Plumbing and Heating in St. Paul for sponsoring this podcast. Great guys at Ryan. And just a quick reminder, you know, as it gets cold, you want to make sure that all your systems are running right, especially at home and business. When you have plumbing or heating problems or air conditioning problems, you want reliable service. There's still time to get your systems checked. So call Ryan Plumbing and Heating in St. Paul, 651-224-4771 in Minneapolis, 612-927-6488. They go back four generations in Frogtown in St. Paul. Quality replacement and repair of all plumbing, heating, and air conditioning systems, residential and business. If you do have problems this winter, they are metro-wide from St. Paul. So if you're in St. Paul or Invergrove, any place on the east side of the metro, Stillwater, whatever, if you're up north like Maple Grove, if you are west like Plymouth or south like Burnsville, Ryan can take care of you. Ryan Plumbing and Heating in St. Paul, 651-224-4771 in Minneapolis, 612-927-6488. You can also check them out online at ryanplumbing.com. And thanks to Greg Ryan and Ryan Plumbing and Heating in St. Paul for making this possible. So just a quick setup. So my friend Brandon Fertig is doing a video documentary on the homeless here in the United States. And we were hanging out, a couple of days ago? And we were at, you know, at some bonfire, and he brought up that he was doing this, right? And I said, we got to do a podcast about it. So when this tent camp popped up along Highway 55 in Minneapolis, next to a sound dampening wall along the highway, Brandon came here and started talking to people. And that was back in August, when there were a few tents, maybe three, four, five small tents. Now it's late October, and there are several hundred people here and a lot of tents, and they're bigger tents. So I would say check the blog at thebobdavispodcast.com for links to Brandon's social media and website, and for links to stories about this camp. Let's walk and talk through the homeless tent camp on Franklin Avenue and 55 in Minneapolis.
So why don't you just tell me about the camp while we're walking down there?
Okay. It started when a few people just pitched tents along this sound wall along the freeway. And they had tried it twice before, but the city did what the city does, or had been doing, and that is when they see a tent city pop up, they'll tell them to leave and they'll tear it down. But for some reason, the city went easy on them. The city said, okay, fine, whatever. And it grew and grew, and then it made the news. The Star Tribune wrote a story about this tent city. And then it exploded in popularity following political leaders coming out. So you're talking the governor, senators, the mayor, and the mayor promised housing for everyone here, and at the time there were probably like 40 tents. Well, since then, you know, they had the green light to go ahead and build. I mean, we can almost see 40 tents right here, and we're not even, you know, this isn't even a third of it.
Wow.
So it has gone up to about, they say between 200 and 300 people are here. The vast majority are Native American. And like, it reached the end of the block here, and so it started wrapping around. And it did the same thing all the way on the other side. And it's a long block, too. So it's substantial.
So we're walking through now.
Correct. We're in.
They got fires. Looks like we got some cooking grills and stuff.
The city put porta potties on both ends of the tent city. And they were quickly graffitied. All the grass that had been here is, you know, gone just from foot traffic. So it's basically a bunch of tents and dirt now rather than grass. We'll see up here some people dug in the dirt to create, like, fire pits. Obviously, it's getting cold. It's Minnesota, late October.
Yeah, what's going to happen when it gets really cold?
Well, they've actually been really good about anticipating the cold weather. So up here, those large tents on the left, like that army-looking tent up there, that's home to Natives Against Heroin, which is the nonprofit that sort of became the default go-to hub for, like, donations and food, but also, like, the security. And in fact, this is James Cross right here. Let me introduce you to him.
Sure.
Because he's the Natives Against Heroin, like, leader. James, remember I mentioned coming here with a guy who does radio podcasts?
Yeah.
This is him. This is Bob Davis.
Bob Davis.
Bob Davis.
Good to meet you.
And we're actually recording now. So
right.
Do you want to ask him a few questions?
What's going on, Bob? How you doing?
Usual insanity.
Right.
So I hear so he was just explaining to me a little bit about your deal. That you're kind of the de facto security thing.
Correct.
How did all this happen for you?
What's up? The founder of Native Against Heroin.
As a movement, we had to stand up.
We got tired of singing about it. We got tired of praying about it. So he decided to do something about it.
Right.
And he did something about it.
So we're out here making sure everything's at a calm, everything's cool, de-escalation, safety. And just keeping it going and having a great day, bringing it as a human in a great community, right?
Well, Brandon was saying that the sense of community here is amazing.
Oh, yeah.
You wouldn't believe it because you got war veterans here. We volunteer our services here because we're war veterans. You want to go to combat? I'll show you.
What's your name? You don't have to give me your full name. Just, you know.
My full name?
Whatever.
Yeah.
Lieutenant Frank Joseph Kilsright, 7th Special Forces, Green Berets.
And what are you doing here?
Watching out for my people.
Okay.
Tell them. Yes.
You want to fight with me?
No, that's not good radio.
No.
Actually, it might be good radio.
It'd be good TV, but not good radio.
So that's what we did. We just stepped up as a movement to make sure that everybody's safe out here. You know, there's a lot of addiction,
right.
Mental health, you name it, it's out here.
When's the worst time of the day?
I think it's, you know, around the time when they get their money, the first,
when the sun
15th.
Goes down.
That's what I was looking for.
Right. When the sun goes down.
It gets a little crazy.
You know, I can, but it's those special days when everybody has their money.
Yeah.
You know, but other than that, it's just, you know, mostly calm.
We're a community. We don't need nobody to come here and monitor us and tell us what to do.
Are they doing that?
We're doing it ourselves.
Right, but I mean, is the city...
Nope.
You know.
Fuck the city. We take care of ourselves.
There's a lot of people that agree with that. What's going to happen when it gets cold?
Oh, well, you know, you see, we got a team.
I mean, we're no strangers in Minnesota to cold, but you know what I'm saying.
I'll still be here.
I believe that you'll still be here.
You know where I'm going to leave?
Well, it's going. A lot of people might leave, but some people might stay. Who knows? You know, you never know how... Who's out here for, you know, being real homeless?
But I'll be here until my women and children get housed.
How many of these tents are going to be okay when it's 40 below, you think?
None of them.
Well, we'll find out.
It was good to meet you.
Yeah.
Really good.
But we're trying to get in winterized.
Yeah.
We're going to walk down this one.
We got the big tent.
Good to meet you.
Right there that's, you know, holds... You know, up to 35 people, you know, comfortably. We got the teepee, we got a wigwam out here. You know, we're making them wrap their tents up more. We're trying to educate. Hey, how you doing? Educate them how they have to start surviving.
So they just check with you, and they got a problem, then you try to help them solve it.
Every time, you know, right on whatever it is, we try to do it right there. You know, because sometimes there's so many problems that you have to deal with it right on the spot, get it over with, and go to the next one. You know, if you don't deal with it right away, then, you know, it might happen again.
So what's your day look like on an average day?
Days are out here just patrolling, walking, helping, organizing the food, keeping it clean, helping the garbage pick up their help out the garbage, city garbage, pick up the garbage,
right.
You know, go buy pizzas, go buy cigarettes, go buy coffee, do what we got to do and make sure that people's needs are met. You know, start them in a good way of the day, you know. Make sure they know they're loved and cared for.
I got to tell you, I was out at the pipeline protest, and this is a lot more organized than
Oh, yeah, definitely, and that's what we learn from, right?
Yeah.
We have to learn from the history. So we got to keep it going and make sure it's organized and make sure it's going in a good way.
So how long do you think this is going to go? I mean, you know, just...
Well, I don't know. I mean, you know, there ain't no fix on it yet. You got the Navigation Center, which is going to be... I know. Navigation Center, which is going to hold up to 250. There's approximately over 400 here. Like I say, there's three types of people. There's the ones that are homeless. There's ones that are here to party. And there's ones that are trying to make some money. So we're trying to make sure that, you know, the ones that are making money are talked to on a daily and pushed out. The ones that
when
are...
When you say trying to make money, what are they doing?
You know, selling drugs, you know. And that's not, and that's just not the addiction, you know. That's people that are obviously trying to entrepreneur for
sure.
their pockets, right? Addiction, if you're trying to, you know, sell a little to keep well and keep non-sick, that's not dealing. That's just, you know, part of addiction. So we know that and we see that. So that's why with new faces, you know, we have to continue to watch them and, you know, do our own investigations.
So the plan here is to get everybody in some kind of shelter. That's kind of the deal.
That's the plan, but that ain't reality.
Right.
Right? That ain't reality.
Yeah.
You know, it ain't going to be reality, you know. But when you spend $1.5 million for a six-month fix, when you could spend and make little tiny homes that are more efficient and are more foundation, that are more, you know, long-lasting, where you can keep it going, and build these people up so they can start getting jobs, getting into treatment, feeling better about themselves. That's how you're gonna fix the homeless problem.
Did anything come out of the police chief, mayor, governor visit that was kind of publicized?
No. That's all it was. Publicity. You know, like I asked the mayor, have you ever been homeless? He said, no. Then you can't feel it. You don't know what's going on.
But, I mean, did they do anything?
No. I mean, they voted to have that navigation center open. You know, which is a plus, which was a strong thing on the, you know, Red Lake coming down, because at first for like the rooftop depot, they were, you know, trying to wind their way out of it with no direction going forward. So when Red Lake came down and did that, said they had land and they're ready to, you know, do it, then it got done. So, but other than that, if it wasn't for, you know, the tribals, you know, they wouldn't still have a place to go to.
So are these people coming from the reservation, or are they coming?
I mean,
from
they're all
town?
all over. I mean, you know, they're coming from St. Paul due to the St. Paul ones getting closed. They're coming from reservations, they're coming from under the bridges, in between garages, out of the trap house, out of
wherever
cross pumps, everywhere. So it's just keep on going in a good way, and you know, that's why we treat these people like they're our relatives.
Yeah.
This guy up here, he's famous for his generosity.
How are you doing this morning?
How are you?
Pretty good. You did
Alan,
person?
Right?
How you
yes.
Doing?
Yeah.
How you doing, sir?
This is
Bob
Alan
Davis.
Law. They
good
call him the sandwich man.
Oh, yeah.
He's been
I know.
USA.
Where are you from today?
I am a podcaster.
From where?
From my podcast, the Bob Davis Podcast.
Oh, that's good. Yeah, this is my 20-hour-a-day job.
Yeah?
No salary. 51 years, except when I taught school for 32 years.
So you've been doing this for 51 years?
Well, I've been on the streets for 51.
Oh, okay.
I taught school for 32, and then it was like every day there'd be a group of kids, usually 40 kids with me. And we have no building, never received any money from the city, the state, the federal government, which surprises me, being that I've been honored by three presidents. And I have an apartment with 17 freezers in it, and I live in my pension. You need a token, sir?
Yeah.
How are you doing this morning?
You're good. You want a pop?
I don't have any pop, but I got some pizzas and stuff over here. But somebody has to care, and it's, to me, it's almost a total insult for Native Americans to be living in tents with this. This is crazy. The whole thing is crazy. So, and yet I'm real conservative. I'm not, you know, I think everyone should work, everyone should do this, but we also have a lot of people that need a lot of things. And so someone has to care. That's why I try to come through here during the day. If I miss it, I'm here at 2 or 3 in the morning.
Yeah, you. So. I understand that your deal is you're out at, you go out at night.
I go out doing the sandwiches too. Yeah. Last year, 350 churches made sandwiches for me.
Right.
It's not a religious program. I am a Christian, but it's not a religious program.
Like, it's just trying to help.
That's it. And the last year, I passed out just about a million sandwiches. You know, this year it'll be 12,000 pair of socks. And the food, I don't pay for. You know, I'm at businesses, whatever. Schools last year, 130 some schools, 130 some businesses. So a lot of times during the day, you know where I slept last night? My friend right here, he came over last night. I had a good sleep last night for 45 minutes at Bobby and Steve's to make a deal on food. I was so tired I couldn't get out, so I slept there for 40, and that was it. And I do this every day. I do it every night. And even with cancer twice in 5 years, somebody has to care. And I don't understand.
What do you think the biggest problem in this thing is?
In this?
Yeah.
Well, first of all, it has to be this group of people. My own thinking is that how do we put Native Americans in this situation? And I have no hatred, but then we wouldn't bring people from another country and put them in this situation. Not even close to this. And so what we need some structure, you know, a lot of positive things, not just a place to live, but some other structured programs, education, and other things. I mean, what do you think of? You got a few hundred people living here, and 99% of the time there's no problems, even if they, you know, aren't friends. I mean, they might be from a different tribe, so forth, and they're still getting along. And when I pass out this, thank you. It's always thank you. Appreciate it. People appreciate it. So I don't understand why our mayor and the rest of them, I don't know. I've suggested before, and I've never met the mayor. He's called me twice to thank me for what I've done over the years, but I'm not politically involved.
Right.
But it's,
well, they were here, and I asked, you know, the guy that's kind of been watching,
yes,
things, if it made any difference.
Not a lot. So far, they're talking about what they're going to do, and then they said some by mid-November, mid-December. What are you talking about? Those of you that are making these comments, come over and spend a night in the tent. Yeah. Come over even in your own car and park for the night. I haven't slept in a bed in 19 years at night. I sleep in the sitting in my van, sitting behind the steering wheel, and that's it. But in blankets, I've already contacted some churches. I got 70, 80 blankets coming in the next couple days, and that's the advantage that and what I appreciate is there's a lot of organizations that will come through, not much with cash, but I don't ask for money. That's what's crazy. I mean,
you ask for them to help pack things.
To help that,
pack the food up.
But I mean, and we turn around and I live in an apartment in Edina. My mother lost her eyesight and hearing, and I'm going, why would I want to live in the day? So that's where I live with 17 freezers, and I rent 7 storage rooms at public storage.
What's going to happen out here when it gets really cold? And we know it will. I mean,
I don't know.
The only question is when. I suppose you pray for a warm winter.
I pray that, or pray. I don't really pray for this. Pray that I win the lottery and they'd be out of here tonight.
$1.6 billion.
Yeah, that's insane too. They'd be in a hotel no matter what. They'd be in a hotel the same night.
Yeah.
And they would behave, they would follow, whatever. Good people. Dealing with this 2 and 3 months later, knowing this weather could turn overnight. But even if it doesn't turn, I would like to be in a tent, no heat, anything else, with some of the winds that we've had. So I don't understand people. I don't understand it. And I don't know. I've contacted a couple of the parties, and I don't know. One lady even, I won't mention her name, in this area, in the Democratic Party, and she doesn't seem concerned at all. Oh, we're so proud about what's going on with the new immigrants here and all this, and that's fine. But what about people who were the first Americans? And I still say that, you know, it's like, it's almost like a slap in the face, disrespect, like they're not important. Of course they're important. Like I used to teach in my class, I'd say, the richest man in the world, his kids are no more valuable than the poorest kid from Rwanda that has nothing.
it, right? Well, those buildings over there are full of people from other countries.
I know.
You know.
And a lot of them have a lot of driving nice cars and whatever. And that's, again, I'm not going to get into that. But the question is, my concern is, right, and they're my friends too, a lot of them. But, I mean, free this, I don't know. I don't understand it. Look at the basketball team. I saw something in the newspaper that St. Paul's trying to raise $300,000 or $400,000 for low-income housing and so forth. We have basketball players making that money in one game. This is crazy. And when you add their shoe contracts, they're making twice that much. You know, if these athletes, and I've never heard from any of the sports teams as far as any donation, all you'd have to do is donate a couple games and you take it off your taxes. It wouldn't cost you a penny.
What would they do with it? What's the idea of getting them into FEMA trailers or what's
the plan? Get them into something right now. I mean, it's at least something trailers where there's some kind of heat, where there's something where it's somewhat comfortable. And myself, we're spending more than $300 a day. To come down here.
So, my understanding is a lot of these people are drug addicts.
Some are probably not that much. Yeah, when some people, they're all on drugs. What do you mean they're all on drugs? I can go to Edina, I can go to Richmond. And there's not that much difference. The difference is they do it in a different way. They'll come in and buy their drugs and whatever.
Yeah.
But and the biggest thing I see in the homeless situation is a mental illness with a lot of people. And not just that, but you've been, I mean, like the people here now, they've been homeless, most of them have been homeless for years. And no one's really, for years, they haven't really cared. And all of a sudden, because of the supply and demand, that rent that used to be for that raggedy duplex used to be $500, and now it's $1,200, $1,400. So you can't really afford
it. Them out here.
Yeah, and you can't really afford it, and you're not making enough to be able to live in a place. And I don't understand this. And you look at from here all the way down in apartments, most are subsidized for someone else. I don't understand it. Is this what, need a couple tokens?
Yeah.
Are you need?
I'm going to let you get back to it.
No problem. It was nice talking to you.
Good talking to you, too.
You get a brochure?
Sure.
Yeah, call anytime if you have any. Get one for you. How you doing? Absolutely. No, it's crazy. So, but it was nice to meet you.
Good to meet you,
have
too.
Have a nice day.
Good luck.
And I hope things get better. You have a good day, too.
Thank you.
Later.
Thank you.
How you doing?
Hi.
You can see obviously that there's no shortage of community outreach, medical people on standby in case there's, and there have been a couple of overdose deaths. So,
wow, this continues way on down here.
Yeah, that was the halfway point, the donation center, the donation point, and it goes all the way down to the end where that van is.
It's so weird because there's all these tents and then you've got traffic right here. Yeah. Which freeway is? Is this 94 or 35?
55.
So we're looking at safety. We're looking at berms and then a giant fence. So then you just had that
yesterday.
What do they call that?
The guard. We're tenting right here.
What do they call that thing? The guardrail. That's what it is.
Yeah, yeah.
So there were tents all along here, too.
Yeah, there were tents here. And then they obviously told them to go and they put in these concrete barriers of the proper fence about 10 feet, 8 feet tall.
So then now they're cleaning all this up right now.
Yeah. This was like the original. It started
this was
down
it right here.
It started down here, and it just kept going back. And when I first visited on August 15th, I think was when I did my first interview down here, there wasn't much beyond the bend where that donation center is, where you talked to Alan. Beyond there was just a few, you know, just a couple tents sprinkled beyond there. And now, of course, it's jam-packed.
We're looking across 55 to a building, an industrial building that is being torn down. So that's the Cedar Box Company, right? Or is it the one next door?
The one next door. It was a vacant building.
And they're going to put trailers over there and move everybody into the trailers.
Correct.
And then whatever happens after that happens.
Correct.
And then we got a temporary police camera deal here.
Both ends and on that boulevard. There are, I think, spot shotters and
when did they put those
cameras
in? After the visit?
Those have been here a while. I would say at least since August. Yeah, they put those in pretty quick.
So this is the back end of it.
Do you know where the AA is?
You just keep walking. There's going to be a vehicle. There'll be some tables with clothing. And there'll be a fire built. And there's people around the fire. It's all there. You'll see the donations.
Appreciate it.
Yep. And it's funny how it kind of mimicked a city where you look at the skyline of a city 100 years ago and the buildings were all like half the size they are now. Well, the tents were just these small little two-man pup tents, and then they've gradually gotten bigger and bigger.
Oh,
and
yeah.
Connecting tents.
So now it's...
And so now you walk into some of these things and it looks like the size of a small like trailer house or something.
Yeah, or I came by earlier, but...
Much better mood today.
Did you hear me earlier? You were out?
Yeah, I had it.
So Earl was one of the original 13. Residents here. And he's the guy I first interviewed here on August 15th, when there were probably 30 or 40 tents, and now there's, 150 or whatever.
Less than that, it was less than that then.
What do you think?
Oh, it's garbage, horrific, scary, and depressing.
So this is not a good situation for you?
No. And in the beginning it was, because there was only a few of us here, and we were all dedicated to ourselves, and we kept to ourselves. Basically kept it clean, and, we all knew each other, and we all stood by each other. Then now there's people that are coming, now they're beyond the wall now,
And right.
It's just
looping around.
Then now they put up this fence here for the snow barrier. Come on now. Basically trying to keep us in like animals. Cages,
Yeah, there's a fine.
What about the tribal guys, the Native Americans against drugs or whatever it is?
They came here to support us in the beginning. Well, they more or less took over. They knew what things were going to be like and what was going to come in, so they got their hands dirty. And that's pretty much what it is.
When you say they got their hands dirty, what do you mean by that?
Self-explanatory. Okay. Everybody knows what that means.
Okay.
And it goes back further than that, once he publicized it all, and he got funding left and right, it's just...
So now this has become a political thing.
Oh,
it's not just some people that are putting
I'm glad my reservation did not donate any kind of money or any time, any land or anything. Red Lake, they're a sovereign nation, they can do what they want, And all they can do is just live by their ways and rules, and that's how it's gonna be over there. I refuse to bring my kids here. That's all we're waiting for.
Who are your kids?
My mother's.
Okay.
And
so what's the plan? You're gonna stay here, through the bitter end, or?
Pretty much. They told her 2 months. Up to 2 months. That could be up in December. It's gonna get frigid as cold.
Oh,
it already is.
Yeah.
And I'm going through one tank of propane, little green ones, one a night, just to keep my stove alive and hot and warm, And now I made it into a complete L shape, so it's basically like a house inside.
Yeah.
We got a bedroom, our kitchen, our storage areas and so forth here. We started off with just a little twin size tent that I bought from Goodwill for $8. And we lived in that for about a month. Then we graduated to a bigger one, then another bigger one, then a couple bigger mowers. So it's just,
Like you wouldn't. It sounds fun the way you're describing it.
It is. Well, it is. It was exciting. Now we just keep to ourselves and we just stay in.
Yeah.
We don't go no further than we have to.
What happens at night around
here? It gets a little scary, a little hectic. You got your people who don't consider it nobody. There's people here that work. There's women and children here. That kids get up at 6 o'clock in the morning and go to school. And you got people yelling around here all night long. And
so you kind of sleep with one eye open is what you're saying?
Oh, yes. You have to.
Or maybe you just stay up all night.
We've done that several nights, And we sleep during the day. Like right now, she's sleeping, and she slept pretty much most of the day, and I'll sleep at night, Okay. She'll stay up and watch me.
Why does Minneapolis have more homeless people than Houston, when Houston is quite a bit larger, and there's no cold winters?
When we originally talked about this, it was interesting because you said that... what's starting to happen is that in back in the day, the Minneapolis Rex days, right? The homeless were guys that were just either railroad workers and they were just drunks or whatever. And you're saying now it's got more of a cosmopolitan. It's changed over the years. And you got this problem in San Francisco and you got this problem in Portland. And apparently now we got this problem in Minneapolis.
Yeah, it did change in like the 70s and 80s. And that's part of the history of that I hope to enlighten viewers with this documentary, because you think of homelessness as, oh, it's always been like this, but you're right, like back in the 50s. So it's kind of the timetable usually starts at the end of World War II. And I don't know if it's returning soldiers or what it was, but then that's when you have the quote-unquote hobo and hopping in the railway cars and things like that. Kind of the classic hobo with alcoholic and raggedy clothes, and he might be a day laborer. He'd stay in flop houses, one-room places. Those flop houses were understandably not liked, so eventually they would, and they were old buildings, so they would get tore down. Those communities of hobos would disperse or even maybe disappear. But what came about in the 70s and 80s, and I'm trying to figure out the cause of this, but that's when you saw the rise of homeless who were truly homeless. They didn't even have...
Well, what it is I think part of it is it's gentrification that's making urban rents now, you know, the whole thing of we want to... Now, this is my opinion. We want to subsidize all these apartment buildings. We want to subsidize all these apartment buildings to create this amazing downtown, and that sounds like when you talk to Alan Law, that what it did was it drove rents up. So now you can't stay in the dilapidated duplex anymore for $500 a month because rents are so high. You think that's got anything to do with it?
See, there's...
We can keep walking.
When you looked at the homeless in the 50s and 60s, it was almost all white men. Well, now white men are they're not the majority. So what happened to those communities between the 50s and, you know, say the 70s and 80s? And that's where I think, that's why I'm interviewing older Native Americans, older African Americans, because you talk to them and they'll universally tell you that they don't remember the homelessness like this when they were kids, like in the 60s or 50s. There was a breakdown in the community, is what I'm hearing from the older African Americans, at least. Whereas before they would, you know, it's kind of the idea of we take care of each other, that kind of thing, and now that sense has kind of, that sense of community is lessened.
I wouldn't have come down here without you. I mean, this is amazing. And you know what? You think, oh, this is going to be extremely intimidating and people are going to beat the hell out of me and stuff, but it's like...
Well, it helps to...
It's just people.
To start with James is good.
Yeah, because...
I did get a lot of hell when I came down here with my camera the first times.
They didn't like it.
I remember I was interviewing Earl when he was showing me the rest of the tent city. So I was walking and talking with him. I had my phone on him because I was just recording with my cell phone. And people in the background were pissed. What are you doing? You can't take my... You know, so they didn't like that at all. I think they've kind of gotten used to...
Media.
Yeah. And getting in with James is always huge because he's got more clout there here than anyone.
I got enough for you, dog.
My name is Brandon Fertig of Brandon Fertig on the Periphery. My website is theperiphery.com. And you can find me on Facebook and Twitter and all that. My YouTube channel is The Periphery, and that's probably my most popular and successful social media. With all the videos I've put together of interviews I've done around the country and around the world. And I'm currently in the middle of a documentary about homelessness in the U.S. My interest in that started last summer, so two summers ago of 2017, when I traveled the Pacific Northwest and I saw the issue of homelessness in Portland, Seattle, Vancouver. And I'd planned on going back out west to interview people around the homeless issue out there, like, because along the west coast it's quite a bit worse than it is even here in the Twin Cities. But then this tent city that they call the Wall or the Wall of Forgotten Natives popped up, and the city and the state let it stay, and that's really what has allowed it to grow as it has. It's the one tent city that sort of has politicians' blessing to exist. When the politicians came out, it was a lot of lip service. Especially since most politicians in the Twin Cities are left-leaning, that's some of their go-to ideological, like, they got to hit on those points, right? We got to help the homeless, we got to help the everyman, we got to help those who need help the most. And the city comes out, the governor, senators, But I think the sentiment within the community, the homeless community, is that it was a lot of talk, and they're not happy with the amount of action they've seen behind the talk.
Thanks again to Ryan Plumbing and Heating in St. Paul for making this possible. Once again, they are metro-wide from St. Paul, so all over the metro they can help, and they keep your systems running, whether it is heating, plumbing, or in the summer, air conditioning. If you need help, you can call Ryan Plumbing at 651-224-4771 in St. Paul. In Minneapolis, 612-927-6488, or online at ryanplumbing.com. Thanks for listening to the Bob Davis Podcast on Stitcher.com, iTunes, TuneIn. If you guys want more information and links, you just go to the page at thebobdavispodcasts.com. Appreciate it if you like this to share it on your Facebook page and on Twitter. Also, appreciate the likes and the interest in Instagram as well for the Bob Davis Podcasts. And thanks for following me on Facebook and Twitter and for your donations for Mobile Podcast Command at thebobdavispodcast.com. Thanks for listening to Podcast 771.
This information and give them a call, or
yeah, can you all write it down?
Yeah, I can.
There's no baby in there.
Okay, well that's good.
What's your name again?
Karina.
Karina. Okay, I'm Brandon.
Hello, Brandon.
Hi. This is my friend Bob. He does radio.
How you doing?
Let me see here. I'm trying to figure out the best way to do this. Do you have a pen on you?
No.
I'm kind of rushing right now. I don't want to be rude.
No problem. Here. I'm going to put it in your hands, okay?
Okay.
My phone number is on here. Shoot me a text. Whatever is easiest, feel free to call me.
Okay.
I do want to give you this information.
Okay, I'm going to get all of you to Facebook. Or
that's fine. You go facebook.com/bfertig and you'll find me. It's this picture. No, it isn't. But I'm easy to find on Facebook.
Okay.